Welcome back to Founder Stories, and have I got an episode for you. Starting and running a business can be hard, and sometimes we need a little inspiration to get us over the hump. Today, I'm interviewing two of the most inspiring entrepreneurs I've ever met. And they're both just teenagers. I learned so much from my time with these two, and I'm certain you will too. I'm Brian Scudamore, founder and CEO of O2E Brands. We're home to 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Wow One Day Painting, and Shack Shine. All right, I am so stoked. This is the first time with the Founder Story, my podcast, that I've ever interviewed anyone who isn't a franchise partner. I'm incredibly passionate about having teens start businesses. I started my business, McDonald's drive-thru, started the Rubbish Boys as a teenager. I now get to hear your story and inspire others, because I believe if teenagers can start a business, what about all those people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s thinking about it who can't yet take the leap? So welcome to Seamus Madden, Campbell Barron. You guys want to give me a quick intro? What's your day job?
Yeah, so currently I am the 17-year-old host of the Ambit podcast. Do a couple of different things. I host that show. We inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs, bring on guests like Brian Scudamore, along with people like Mark Cuban, Tim Draper, and some other really fascinating folks to really just inspire the next generation on their journey building companies. I also lead some business development for a startup. We're currently in stealth, so can't go too deep into what we do right now. But yeah, that's pretty much the day-to-day.
A 17-year-old in stealth mode because you're working on something big. I just love that. Thanks, Seamus. Campbell, what's your day job?
Like Seamus, I hosted a podcast back in the day, interviewed actually a lot of the same folks. Tim Draper, Mark Cuban as well, and the founders of Figma and Headspace and a lot of cool startups. And that show kind of turned into a TikTok account, which was acquired by the media company Workweek down in Austin, Texas in August of 2021. Beyond that, after the whole Workweek acquisition, started a company called Mantra. We're building a slide-based video creation tool. We've raised a couple rounds of financing backed by some US investors and are building our team remotely across Canada. So a lot of exciting stuff in the works.
That's amazing. I want to say I feel like I'm looking in the mirror back at my 19-year-old self, but you guys are way smarter than I was there. So you're much further ahead. I want to start with just a little bit of bragging about you guys so that people understand just how talented these teenagers I'm speaking to are. So how we met is probably a good place to start. Seamus reaches out to me, sends me an email and says, hey, will you be on my podcast? I'm a 16-year-old podcast host. I didn't even read more. I just went, yes. Because to me, I believe when a 16-year-old asks, if they can cold pitch and have the guts to do that and pitch an entrepreneur, the answer is enthusiastically yes. So I said yes, I show up, I meet Seamus, and I'm blown away with the energy and enthusiasm, hard-hitting questions. I'm like, dude, this guy knows his stuff. At the end, I said, I want to hang up the Zoom recording and I want to find out your story. And I find out you were bullied, a little chip on your shoulder, something to prove. You start a podcast, 8 listeners, mom, dad, grandma. You start to realize, hey, I'm going to stick with this. And you started cold pitching a ton of people like Mark Cuban and getting them to say yes. And it turned into this top 1% of podcasts on the planet. You then went in to get a job as a VC because you took your VC content and said, I got to learn more about this job that's fired me up. And you went and applied with Reid Hoffman, Blitzscaling, and Reid sold his business for gazillions to Microsoft. And here you are learning from some of the best on the planet in the venture capital world while keeping your podcast going. Unbelievable. Just love your story. So thank you for being here. Campbell and I met similar. Reaches out. I'm a 16-year-old, so it was pre-pandemic. And the answer was yes. Would you let me film you for a movie we're making, a documentary, full feature documentary with some big funding behind it? Yeah. But then I started to research Campbell a little bit. And you shared some of selling off your TikTok account. Didn't even know you could do that. It's unbelievable. Congrats. You use that money to go start a new company today called Mantra.
Yep.
Video production. Give us a little bit of that.
Yeah, Mantra is a software company. It's a video creation tool. It's kind of looks like Google Slides. It's very easy and approachable to use. And the concept behind Mantra basically happened after the Workweek acquisition, where I found myself editing a lot of freelance videos for various companies. And these videos were not entertainment videos. They were communication videos, a genre that had only become relevant, you know, post-pandemic, as video became an important way that, you know, teams communicate. And so built the start of the company just by creating product prototypes essentially and cold emailing anyone who would talk to me. Spoke to Seamus at around this time, and our original direction was education. And I'll give Seamus some credit here. He called me out on that in the moment. And he's like, I don't know about that. I think it may be more beneficial in the context of teams. And I gave a really, I'd say a PR answer to that question, but turned out Seamus was right, because the company direction, as many companies do, evolved well beyond video for education and is now a tool for teams. And we're in beta and looking to release it very soon.
Amazing. Something I want to shout out that you've both done that I've noticed, because you've both told me as I've gotten to know you a little bit about this story, the cold pitching, just having the guts to find someone's email and reach out. And I think, Campbell, when I was listening to your podcast, you said you did 8 months of nonstop reaching out to every entrepreneur you could think of. And that's important, because I think what most entrepreneurs do is they sit behind a computer and they think about all the work they could do, but they get blocked with not actually just reaching out. And my belief's always been, you never know what you'll get in the world unless you ask. If you don't ask Oprah to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show, it ain't happening, right? So it's, how do you just continue to reach out and poke away at following up? Pitching people and following up is such an untaught skill that it's great that you guys get innately. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can say, you know, the reality is, and I'm sure Seamus, you felt this way too, it definitely gets easier when you have a brand behind you and more momentum. For me, the initial 12 folks that I talked to, because I kind of wanted to release 12 episodes in a row initially, there was no brand. I had no social media presence. I had no following. You know, I had very limited experience at the time. And at the same time, I didn't want that to kind of slow me down and let me, you know, I would say prevent me from interviewing really cool guests. And so the answer was just brute force, if you will. You know, I think the reality is it's just a numbers game. And I realized, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing is that someone says no, and then you move on. And the worst thing is that someone says no, and it takes 5 follow-ups, but it'd be even better if they said no right away. And so it kind of changes your perspective around, you know, how to ask for things and how to reach out to people. And I think as I talk to more and more founders, I think you do start to realize that the vast majority of them, while they're smart and intelligent, you know, and hardworking, they're not that much different from you and I, right? They just have this mentality around them that has allowed them to build a company and, you know, succeed and, you know, follow through with their ideas. But I've never talked to someone and felt like, man, that person is infinitely smarter than me. In fact, oftentimes I've talked to people and thought, man, that person has just had a much higher pain tolerance than me. And there, I think that's almost what it takes.
Yeah, especially in the early stages of cold emailing, whether you're first starting a company or a podcast or a media brand or whatever it might be, in the very early stages, basically you get this 2 to 3% average conversion rate. Really, nobody wants to hear from you or nobody responds to you. You're pretty much a nobody, and that's okay. And I think it's important to be at that stage where you're a nobody. And you learn a lot starting out from ground zero and building it up. I'm sure, Brian, you know this more than anybody, but just learning the tactics, going through the motions, doing it 100, 200, 300 times, really every single time I've created an email and I've gotten a no or rejection or no answer or even a yes, I'm always trying to figure out what can I improve on that email to make it more engaging, make it more interesting. And when I take a look back at just 2 years ago, the cold emails I sent, I'm like, oh, these are garbage. I don't know why anybody responded to these. But same thing with the podcast. I think it's just the repetitions and just doing it over and over again that keeps you consistently learning and able to reach more people.
And I love that you guys are trying to improve them, right? Constant improvement. First of all, they worked. And second of all, if you can do something better next time and you test it, that's awesome. Let's talk about age for a second. A pro or a con in your world?
Yeah, it's definitely a pro. When I started, I was, you know, in the business field. I was 10 years old. I walked into my dad's office. He left McGraw-Hill Education to start his own education company called Junction Education. When he started that, very early stages, he bootstrapped it to now a 7-figure business. But at the time, it was very early. I walked into his office. I see 3 small desks in a small room with a little window in the corner. But what I saw is he went to work every day with the suit and tie, and I see his desktop loaded with a bunch of different tabs and post-it notes and everything. I was just super inspired by how hard he was working at that time. So I loaded up casually my desktops with the weather and a couple other Google tabs, and pretty much that was it, to make it seem like I was just as busy. But at that time, I was just really inspired. And I think learning at that young age can be really pivotal to figure out your passion. And once you get it, you can unlock that key to get to where you want to go. From there, I just wanted to get involved. I started testing some of their courses early on, being a Q&A tester, making sure all the buttons and software worked and everything like that. I had to ask him multiple times, but I was eventually able to do it. At that time, now realizing I was like 9 or 10 years old, it makes sense why he probably didn't want me to test out the software. But a year or two later, I was at the Apple store. My grandparents would take me to the Apple store every summer. And I was always interested in learning about the latest gadgets, how they worked. Like you said, just learning. I know after about a year or two of going to the Apple store, I was ready for the next step. And I walked into the back of the Genius Bar, noticed there was a woman who was having trouble booting up her phone. And I had the challenge in my mind. I'm like, okay, do you think I can figure this out before an Apple employee comes up to help her? So I decided. I just walked up her and said, hey, I think I can help you with the problem. Can I give it a shot? And she said, sure. I'm not sure how helpful you could be, but sure, why not? Go ahead. I was able to solve the problem in about a minute or two, and she was on her way, and the Genius Bar employee was coming up behind me and asked, hey, how can I help? And she's like, oh, wait, no, this 12-year-old just solved it for me, but thank you. And she was on her way. Gosh. I think that was inspiring, just helping other people, getting involved in that early age. But Campbell, what are your thoughts?
I will say that when I started my pod, and I was 15 at the time, I put podcast interview with a 15-year-old in the subject line. And even then, reflecting on that, that is obviously why, you know, even with the poor conversion rate, that is obviously why the 12 people who are my 12 first guests said yes, was because I was 15. And, you know, once I kind of got those 12 guests, you know, the momentum started building. I turned 16 and, you know, changed the subject line to podcast interview with a 16-year-old. And then I would say I've interviewed these guests, and then 17 and 18 and so on. And eventually the effect wears off. In fact, Seamus, you're close.
Yeah, but I already will say, starting to see it a little bit.
The reality is, you know, you've spent, you know, the 16, 17 year, you know, your last few years of your life building up this portfolio where with interviews where it won't matter anymore. And so the luckiest thing that ever happened to me was getting in the room and using my age as a way to get in the room. And then once I got in the room, my work kind of spoke for itself. And that is what propelled me forward.
There's two things that I'm noticing here from both of you guys that you do. One is you don't fear rejection. You know, you can just ask and who knows what will happen. And Seamus, as you said, a 2 or 3% conversion, that's still a 2 or 3% conversion. It's not like you're just striking out every single time. You're getting some success. The other thing is you're able to tell a story around it. I think you've figured out the importance that when you pitch it, Campbell, I heard you were 13 years old when you worked for the CBC as one of the youngest journalists, right? Like, you obviously were able to tell a story to get in the door, but tell a story to share with the world in terms of news. I think you both are natural storytellers and they're very gifted. And telling that story of 15-year-old who's covered these guests, do you want in, is very impactful. Can we talk for a minute about this world of social media and storytelling? How important has storytelling been in your journeys so far?
I think it's basically been everything, frankly. The reality is stories are so powerful. And whether it's the medium, you know, is a podcast, or the medium is a short form video, or the medium is, you know, a long form video, the reality is people still, since the beginning of time and to this day, can rally around compelling stories. And they're very, very, very powerful. And I would argue that it's not just in the context of starting a podcast. I think that is one way to tell a story and, you know, pitching guests to be on your show. I think it's equally as powerful in the context of telling a story. This thing that I'm building, it doesn't exist now, but it will in 6 months. And here's what it will look like. And here's the impact it will have. And you're doing that same thing to investors. And you're doing that same thing to advisors. And the reality is, I think the podcast, you know, in that skill set, along with making videos and content, was such a great, you know, training ground, was such a great education for what would come later on. And an education, frankly, that I just wouldn't have had I been spending all my time studying, frankly. So that's my take.
Yeah, I think stories are one of the most underrated components. They relate to people, right? And storytelling is all about how can you relate to a person. They go back to all the way back to when people were cavemen, right? So they were telling stories on the rocks of the caves, of the walls. But I think it's if you have a storytelling component, that is significantly more valuable than maybe the education behind you or just the stamps behind you or the stamps on your head, whether that be where you went to school or wherever it might be. If you can tell the story of how you got into where you are today versus somebody saying, hey, I went to this school and I'm applying for this job, you probably have a much higher chance of getting that job or building that company or getting that customer or that client or whatever it might be. Because at the end of the day, people want to connect with people. They're not interested in connecting with maybe just a logo on your head. They're interested in connecting with who you are as a person. So I think that's why storytelling is extremely valuable, not just in the media space, which it very is, but also beyond that.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. Our business naturally fell into storytelling. If you think of the 1-800-GOT-JUNK story today, we've built a $700 million-ish business across our brands. But what got us to where we are today, the story, the way we've done things, won't necessarily get us to the $1 billion and beyond. So I'm going to do a little reverse mentoring here. I have always been a big believer in asking for help. As a 52-year-old, it seems interesting for me to go back now and go, ask the teenagers for help. So what I want to ask you is, if you think of 1-800-GOT-JUNK and what you know about the space we're in today, what would you do differently? What do you think it's going to take to have 1-800-GOT-JUNK be a billion-dollar business and beyond? Campbell, I see you got the eyes are looking like you got an idea spinning there.
Initially, the thought was, well, it's worked out, so that's not tamper with the formula. But ultimately, I would say that there are a couple kind of ideas that could be interesting and at least fun to talk about. And so I think the first is more bold. Let's put it that way. If 1-800-GOT-JUNK didn't exist today, and I was interested in starting something, I stumbled upon that pickup truck in the McDonald's parking lot somewhere in the greater Vancouver area. And I realized that I wanted to, build a company around junk removal. Being in this kind of 2023 technology space, my immediate thought may be, maybe this isn't a service business. Maybe this is a tech platform where anyone with a truck, like Uber, you push a button, anyone with a truck comes, picks up your stuff, takes it, and that you're a platform. And I think that obviously couldn't have been done when you started the company. But I think today, who knows? Maybe it would work. Maybe it wouldn't. Maybe the economics wouldn't work because ultimately the economics of Uber aren't great. And so maybe it wouldn't. Maybe you would need to raise a lot of money to make that happen. And there's downsides to that. Mm. And so again, the formula right now seems to be working pretty well. But I will say there are a lot of people people are looking for ways to make money. They have a truck that isn't earning a yield because it's a truck. And if you're just driving that truck around town, swiping to accept gigs, if you will, coming to someone's house, loading it, maybe there's some kind of pre-training thing, and then taking it to, maybe there's a central 1-800-GOT-JUNK kind of disposal center. That could be an interesting model. Definitely something, cool. Little 2023. But the reality is the customer would get a very similar experience by just using your site right now and booking it, which, my family has done. We have been customers. So that's one. Two, the second idea is a little more like matter of fact around content. I think what a lot of brands, what your brand does not lack at all is a brand identity, especially around kind of marketing and advertising. However, what's an interesting aspect of your business is it's inherently satisfying. And satisfaction is not something that's tied to every business. I believe when we first met, you mentioned that you were exited the moving business because there wasn't a way to easily satisfy a customer at the completion of the gig, which makes 100%, it makes total sense. But you can easily do that with your service. And I think that there's an interesting opportunity to kind of lean into user-generated content around your customers, either making videos or sharing the process and making short-form TikTok videos, or maybe some of your folks on the ground making short-form TikTok videos, a day in the life of a 1-800-GOT-JUNK employee. Here's the before and after. And it's totally unrelated to your brand. It's a very nice contrast to your brand. It's very separate. These videos are shot on their phone. This is snapping your finger and all the junk is gone, whatever it may be. And I think that with the right execution, that could be really interesting because there are a lot of, tech products, but also kind of fashion products that have blown up on TikTok where the videos are being made by, regular people. And I think that's very approachable and really interesting. So that could be another opportunity.
Yeah, but I agree with Campo on that. So maybe whether it's you or one of the some of the franchise partners that would share their journey on maybe how owning a franchise has impacted their lives, that could not only help bring more franchise partners to you, but also just, you know, expand that brand and expand that journey and expand that there are other ways besides just building an actual tech company or whatever it might be to be a business owner. But yeah.
Well, again, that supports the you never know what you'll get unless you ask. I'm glad I asked you guys the questions because thank you. There's pure gold there. I want to go into your stories for a second. What was your aha moment? And what I want here is I want our audience who might have people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who are going, oh, I've always wanted to start a business. 66% of people say they want to start a business at some point in their life. But unlike the three of us, they might not ever be ready to take that leap.
The reality is you're never actually ready. You know, what do they say? They say planning is everything, but plans are useless. Something along those lines. Maybe I reverse that. But the reality is, you know, beneficial to make plans, but the reality is most of those plans don't actually go as planned. And I think that's in, you know, the case with starting a company, right? Whether I think about my podcast, whether I think about the TikTok account or my latest venture Mantra, the reality is with all three of those projects, the aha moment was, you know, the satisfaction of kind of building something up from nothing. But to get to that point took a lot of work. And, you know, I think founders who have a high pain tolerance, frankly, and are gritty and can suffer through the hard, depressing days are the ones that ultimately make it out the other end. And I think one of my founder friends when I was starting Mantra said, you know, if you want to know what it's like to start a company, just get some of your friends to beat you up and, you know, you'll get a good simulation. And that might've been a little over dramatic, but the reality is, it, you know, there's high highs and low lows. And I think I've learned along the way to kind of stay in the middle and not get too caught up in the highs and not get too caught up in the lows. But there is no kind of perfect place to start. I think in the context of the aha moment, for me, it was very specific. For Mantra, it was kind of seeing a bunch of companies want to utilize my skill set to create videos that weren't necessarily very hard to make, that I thought software would be a really great accelerant for that. In the context of the podcast, it was, grew up listening to shows. I want to meet more people in tech. This is a really great media opportunity. And in the context of TikTok, it was a lot of people making dancing videos. I don't see a lot of business content on here. There must be other kids like Seamus and hundreds of thousands who are interested in starting companies. Maybe this is a great medium to reach them. And so whatever the aha moment is, it can only get you so far. What kind of gets you from the aha moment to building an actual company is the relentless focus on execution and actually doing the work. And it's not very exciting, you know, it's not very sexy, but it is the difference between actually coming out the other end and not. And there are many projects I abandoned because I didn't have the will to make it happen. But I think the ones that you truly care about, the ones that you're really excited to work on, those are the ones that actually, you know, you see through fruition.
Yeah. And ever since I was really young, I've always wanted to build something from zero and just scale it up. I felt like my aha moment wasn't even when I started the podcast. It was probably months later because I felt like, you know, for the first 8 months, like we mentioned earlier, there's pretty much zero traction. I still didn't know if it was going to work. I wasn't sure if that was actually going to be a viable solution to inspire the next generation. So I think my aha moment was when I started to see that growth. I'm like, okay, this could actually work. So I think, you know, sometimes when you first start to see it and when you first start to build a business, I think you got to be really passionate about the idea, but you might not have your aha moment. This is like, this is going to work and this is going to be the way until maybe months or even years after you start it.
Yeah. And you've got to be willing to adapt. And so it is being open to how do you tweak things. I agree with you 100%, Seamus, that what the model is that we initially see isn't necessarily where things go. How important is failure? It sounds like you both admitted already that you've made some mistakes, which is awesome. Check the box. How important is failure in your success, your young success?
Yeah, I think failure is probably the most important to long-term success. You know, when I first started out in, whether that be business and stuff like that, I had some really wacky ideas. I was like 10, 11 years old. I was like, oh, what if I had like a clip at the end of the bed so I didn't have to pull up my covers every single day and make my bed? I had some pretty crazy, obviously not viable ideas to try to make something happen. In terms of the podcast and even with Valley and a whole bunch of other things and in the venture capital space, space as well. I think each failure teaches something new, and I think the best way to learn is just to fail, and obviously not purposely fail, but just going through the motions, trying your best. And when you look at it in hindsight and see, okay, what didn't go well here, you can analyze that and take a look and how to be improve better, whether that be through the podcast production. I do it every single day when I take clips of the podcast and post it on social media. I'm always trying to figure out, why did this video hit 10K and this one hit 2K, and why did this one hit 100 and this one hit 1200? So that every single time I'm trying to figure out and understand the data in terms of the content space, and just understand as many components as I could to just why that worked and that didn't, and just use those lessons and what I've learned to build something that will work and do it repeatably. So I think failure is probably the only, and well, not only, but definitely one of the most important ways to succeed in the long term.
And Seamus, what's the biggest mistake? If you could pull out all that you've had in your teen years, you know, what's the biggest mistake you've made?
I say the biggest mistake is probably trying to, at least for the podcast, trying to monetize it too quickly. So basically, at around the 8th month mark, when I first hit 1,000 listeners, I'm like, okay, let's monetize, right? We have 1,000, we can monetize. I started to monetize, reached out to brands, and, you know, got a couple of monetizations done. I started placing ads as many places as I could in the episodes just to start getting as much money as I possibly could. Listener numbers dropped by like 30-40%, which is huge. And I was like, okay, I can't do that. That was probably the big mistake. It took me like another month just to climb back to where normal levels were, just because people saw, okay, this kid, he's got 1,000 listeners now. He's just going to load it up with ads. I don't want to listen to it. So I think that's the biggest thing, especially in media and podcasts and stuff, is you don't have to rush to monetization. You can let it play out. As long as you don't need the money, you shouldn't rush to monetization. Now, obviously, we've been able to grow it a lot more. Monetization is perfectly fine now. But I think that mistake also helped me learn how to monetize correctly and do it correctly in a way that still doesn't hurt the actual mission of what the podcast was trying to accomplish. But yeah.
Such a good story. Thank you. Campbell, what's the biggest mistake you've ever made?
So are we talking about yesterday or, you know, the entire entirety of
the
career?
I think,
you know, the reality is I think you end up, you make a lot of mistakes as an entrepreneur. And, you know, I think people start companies twice to not repeat the mistakes they made the first time around. And I could certainly feel that doing it the first time around, especially as a startup. But what I would say is, you know, I think a more recent kind of memorable mistake, which I kind of alluded to at the top of the show, was when we started the company. You know, when you start a company, especially in this day and age, I think something maybe Seamus you could relate to as well, you get a lot of advice from a lot of different people who are very credible, especially in our position where, you know, we're fortunate to talk to interesting people. And oftentimes that advice conflicts. And so I feel like the job of a founder now is actually to distill advice and the source of advice from a wide range of group of people who all have generally good intentions, you know, but not everyone has your context, the full context. And one of the pieces of advice we got when we were starting the company was to focus on one specific niche and narrow in on that niche, satisfy that, you know, customer niche. And in the context of our service, that was education. And it turned out that there was really obvious evidence to suggest that broadening the tool up to kind of selling to teams and, you know, workplaces, in addition to education, would not take away from selling to education. But, you know, we were limiting our market size by being very focused on education. And we spent 3 months too long kind of going down that rabbit hole, and it caused a whole bunch of problems and made a bunch of things more challenging. And the advice was coming from a good place, but the reality is, I think as an entrepreneur, having an ambition, you know, beyond where your starting place is helpful to get, you know, the team aligned, to get investors aligned, to get customers aligned. And to us, we didn't want just to build an education tool. We wanted to build a tool that would help accelerate the future of work. And ultimately, that's what we ended up, you know, that's what we're kind of working towards. And that change alone, just in how we pitched the product and the story and the customers we're going after, had compounding effects as it pertains to the people we were able to hire, the investors we were able to bring on board, and ultimately the customers we were able to, you know, at least have it get excited about our product and the direction of the product. And so I think that was definitely a big one. Learned my lesson there. You know, there's nothing wrong with focusing on a specific niche, but, you know, sometimes you can think a little bigger.
Let's go into the opposite of failure. Let's go into the future where you're never going to fail. What does the future look like for each of you? If you think so, I often get a question asked at the end of a podcast, you know, going back to your teenage self, what advice would you give? That one's an easy one. But if you switch it, you go as a teenager looking at, say, my age, 52, your 52-year-old self, what impact have you had on the world? What big dreams do you have for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I noticed when my grandfather passed last year, we pretty much don't have a lot of time left on this earth. Each of us has a set deadline, and pretty much when we get to that, that's pretty much it. We'll be sitting in the dirt, and that's pretty much it. So I think the end goal for me is to make a big impact on the world, just have people remember who I am, whether that be through inspiring founders to start their own company or building my own company that ends up saving lives. That's probably what I would like to be remembered for, just having that positive impact and not, you know, the fake positive impact. A lot of venture capitalists say, oh, we're going to have this impact on your business. We'll add value to your business. That's every venture capitalist is telling you that. I'm sure you know Campbell for that.
Tell me about it.
So I think, you know, just really having that true impact where everyone across the nation knows, hey, that guy saved a lot of people's lives, or that guy, you know, really had an impact on the world. Exactly where it'll go, I'm not quite sure, but I can't wait to find out.
That's awesome. You're young. You don't need to know just yet. And Campbell, what's your future possibilities? Dreaming big, what's your world look like in the future?
Yeah, again, very difficult to predict. What I will say is very interesting, the more through the podcast and everything and Mantra, I've gotten the opportunity to meet a lot of really interesting kind of young founders, startup-y people, Seamus being one of them. And the amount of optimism that comes from this group of people is very inspiring. And I think it has never been a better, there's a lot of negativity in the world. I think social media accelerates the negativity, but I do believe it has never been a better time to be an entrepreneur. I really do think that's the case. And I think a world where there are more entrepreneurs is fundamentally a better world. And so ultimately the way I look at this is it's not a zero sum game, right? There's not just one product, right? There's a lot of products and they service different people who have different goals and different needs. And whatever I work on, you know, whether it's Mantra, you know, right now, which, you know, I'm committed to building for, you know, the next 10 years at least, right? These things take a long time, you know, and Brian, you've been at it much longer than that and you're still building and there's still a lot of work to do. So who knows? But ultimately, I think, you know, looking at the end of kind of my time, as Seamus put it, if you will, the reality is I think businesses are just a really great way to, you know, make people's lives better. And I think, you know, they do that in very different ways. And for me, you know, there's, you know, building a team, that's fun, you know, raising money, that's fun. But the most satisfying part, I think, of, you know, being an entrepreneur is kind of seeing the impact of your product on the world. And in the context of the podcast, that was, you know, or the TikTok account, that's, you know, getting recognized on the street by a 14-year-old kid who said, you inspired me to start a wow. business. Yeah, you know, that's only recently started to happen. That's very humbling, right? And so whatever it is, I just fundamentally believe as an entrepreneur, you could leave the world a better place. And I think that as a founder in particular, you know, how you kind of plan to do that, the time horizon, as Seamus said, who could predict what the world will look like in 2 years, especially with the advancements in AI, let alone in 20 years or 40 years. So, you know, there's gonna be a lot of opportunity. I can know, you know, that's true. And the folks who have resilience and are able to kind of come back from failure and learn from failure and continue to build, those are the ones that will ultimately do well. So I don't expect it to be easy. I don't expect it to happen really fast, but I do know one thing, which is if I'm, you know, have the same kind of level of grit and determination that I, you know, have now, I'll be okay.
Campbell and Seamus, amazing having you here. You've made a difference. I guarantee it. Anybody that listens to this is going to have a takeaway and probably a nice golden nugget to walk away from. You guys are inspiring. That's why I wanted selfishly to even have you on my podcast, is to get time to interview you and learn from these brilliant, brilliant minds of both of you. Understand what drives you. Take the leap and just do it. And thank you to both of you guys. Awesome. Unbelievable stories from both of you. I know we'll spend more time together outside the podcast because you guys are brilliant and I want to spend more time learning. So thank you for sharing your wisdom with everyone here today, and look forward to chatting again soon.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Thanks, Campbell. All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Founder Stories. I'm Brian Scudamore. I love hearing stories from entrepreneurs. I'm curious, what resonated with you? Tell me on Instagram, LinkedIn, or go to my YouTube channel to learn more.